Where you need to get to on circular economy or any other thing is a situation where there's a sense throughout your organization that the commitment to circular economy or any of the measures or sustainable behaviors is part and parcel of who they are, both at the whole organizational level, this is who we are in this organization, right down to a team level, right down to an individual level.
My name is Patrick Hübscher, and this is Circularity FM, the podcast about understanding, building, and managing circular business models.
Welcome to a new series on Circularity FM, featuring highlights from the Loop Forum 2025. Loop Forum is the leading Nordic business event spotlighting circularity as a key driver for building future-proof businesses. It brought together more than 3,000 professionals from across industries and countries to foster valuable connections, exchange practical insights, and accelerate a circular transformation. This series runs across 4 episodes, each featuring a keynote from the event. We begin with George Marshall, environmental communications expert and founder of Climate Outreach. In his keynote, he explains why conversations are central to advancing the circular economy and how speaking to values and identity can engage people across different groups and perspectives. But before we start, I have an offer for you. If you want to get the actionable one-pager about this keynote, sign up for the Circularity FM newsletter. You can find it at www.circularity.fm.
Hello. Oh, I'm coming through. Hello. I'm not here today to talk about circular supply chains. I want to talk about something equally vital, but often overlooked: how to start the internal conversations about the circular economy that truly reach people and inspire them to act. Because let's be honest, big ideas don't become business-wide transformations by sitting in boardrooms or being buried in tragedy documents. They become real when they circulate, when they're talked about in the break room, debated over lunch, challenged at team meetings, and embraced by people at every level. Because if we want to have a circular economy, we need to start by building a circular conversation. That was good, wasn't it? Did you like that? Yeah, that sounded about right. So I was wondering how to start my speech, so I went to ChatGPT and I said, tell me, could you write for me, please, an inspiring speech on how we need to start a conversation in order to start a circular economy? So that was rather good, wasn't it? I will guarantee I'm not the only person here who's asked AI to write their speeches. I'm probably the only one to confess to it, because I want to make a point. The point is, I'm probably going to be out of a job soon. The point is that we're moving into an age when things become inauthentic. When, if AI can write a good speech, how do we know that the memo is a real memo or an email? The only thing we can trust is when we have someone in front of us and we can see their eyes and we can hear what they're saying, we can interact with them. So I kind of want to make the point that conversations are fundamental, because it's the only area where there is now authenticity. Like, if you think about it in the music industry, the biggest thing now is live performance, because people want to be there and feel it. So conversations are really essential. And there's a difference between communication and engagement. I'm interested in engagement. Engagement is a two-way process where you exchange ideas, where you speak to values and identity. Communications, where you tell people what to do. People don't like communications. They want and need engagement, especially now. So there's kind of two kinds of conversation that are important. There's one which is a conversation between people who are the same, and there's one which is a conversation between people who are different. And I know it's kind of stupid to say when there's one like that and one like that. The the comic writer Robert Benchley's once said, there are two kinds of people, the kind of people who divide the world into two and the kind of people who don't. Right? So there's two kinds of conversation. There's the conversation between people who are the same and the conversation between people who are different. And they're both very important. The one between people who are the same is the conversation between peers. That's the one where you create a unified sense of purpose, where people embed the circular economy or sustainable behaviors into who they are. That's where you build trust, because it's between people who trust each other. Yeah? And they're speaking the same language and the same values. The one between people who are different is where there's the opportunity to find new ideas and where there's a challenge, where there might be less trust, where there might be some friction, and where we can get some creative thinking. So if we think in terms of circularity like ocean currents, the one between peers is like the surface of the ocean. That's the one which creates the waves, which creates the motion, which creates the combined effort. The one between people who are different and have different views is, shall we say, the one which brings up nutrients from the depths. I do a lot of this in my work on climate change, you can imagine. These are both very important currents, especially, I'd say, that circular one which brings things up from the very bottom. I'll come back to that point. So my work for the past 20 years has been starting conversations at both levels, starting conversations between people who are the same. And I'm especially interested in people who are not involved or actually maybe hate environmental activism or environmental activity. So, for example, getting people in Alberta who have just come off the oil patch, they would have been driving these huge, great big trucks, and just getting them together at the end of the day around the beers, and I will buy the beers, and they will sit and they will talk about climate change and how they feel about it between peers. That's a very interesting conversation. Or starting conversations, say, between people of faith, like Muslims after Friday prayers, getting people together to talk about how their faith affects how they think about things, or Indian farmers meeting in the village community hut in order to talk about these things. In other words, between peers, especially people more conservative values. I'll come back to that point. And then in terms of people who are different, my work has been about how can we create conversations across entire organizations, and I've worked with some very large organizations. And I'm especially interested in across entire countries. For all of the people who are different, we all share some values and a sense of identity. How can we say, you do circular economy because you're Danish, and that's what Danish people do, and that's what makes us special. That's what makes us important. Every country, every culture has its own sense of what makes it special, and that's what we need to speak to. So I've done that, for example, in India, Australia, Canada, Iceland. Most recently, as I'll say, in Ireland. And I keep saying politics is important, but politics is really important. Politics is for people's political values is the single greatest determinant of where their situation and what they will think about circular economy, what they will think about environment, sustainable behaviors, climate change, is their politics. There's a lot of research to support that. By the way, that's a global phenomenon. Not just their political party, but also their political values. I mean, here in Denmark, for example, now I don't know if I'm going to say this properly, right? Nye Borgerlich. Did I say that right? No. Your right-wing party, right? I think you need AI here. Not me. Your right-wing party. Supporters of that have half the level of concern of climate change of people who vote for your left-wing parties. Half to double. That is a huge divide, a huge one. So we have to find a way for circular economy and for everything we work on of speaking across political divides, but also to find values which bring people together. And this goes with conversations in your own business as well. So circularity has a lot of appeal to people of conservative values. In my work, I've always been very interested by how people of more conservative values always keep using words beginning with RE. I think in Danish, you'd have something similar with words beginning with gen, right? I've actually gone through thousands of transcripts on this. People of left-wing values tend to say, they might say renewables, they like to say revolution, that's about it. But people on the right are always using the words that are central to circularity. Reduce, repair, reuse, recycle. Yeah. renovate. These are all very conservative values because the re is about making, putting things straight. It's not about a radical change. It's about drawing on who we are as a sense of continuity in order to put things in order. And that, I think, is the key of circularity, which gives it broad-based appeal. There's another key concept as well, which is waste. People of more conservative values, and we've done large-scale research on this and published papers on it, are much more galvanized by language around waste than they are around, oh, goodness me, polar bears or planet or any of the things that environmental organizations might be concerned about. Waste is a very energizing issue because people feel as a fundamental value that waste is wrong. There's a lot to work with in that. And a lot of what I've been speaking, you'll notice, is about values and identity. And I really want to make this point strongly to you, that values and identity are absolutely fundamental. Values and identity are fundamental to the sense that people make of the world. So I've been working in this field for 20 years, especially this issue of behavior change. If you're going to make changes in your organization, if you're going to enable people to support circularity and circular economy, they're going to have to make some changes. Behavior changes, for literature, there's a lot of talk about how to encourage behaviors. You might have seen a lot of this about, like, you know, nudges and making small steps, about freezing and unfreezing behaviors, about creating a choice architecture. Nudge was a very popular concept for quite a while, about creating heuristics and shortcuts. Governments have spent millions on this, trying to encourage people, saying, the British government said, do your bit. Here's 10 easy things you can do. The Canadian government said, are you up for the challenge? The Australian government said, are you climate smart? Ireland said, the power of one. By the way, I think the most disempowering slogan of all time, the power of one. That everybody can take small steps in order to make changes. It didn't work. None of these measures work. Because they are, first of all, because they say little things. And people go, well, if it's little, I'm not going to bother. And we know that the environment is a big thing. But also, little small steps is not a way of empowering what really makes people change. Because all of the literature consistently says the same thing, that when people change and they stay changed, is because they've embodied something into their set of values, a fundamental part of their identity. People will do things because it is an expression of who they are. And once they've done that, they don't change. In fact, they will defend it very strongly. And we know that when people's identity is threatened, they will defend it very, very strongly. Huh? Similarly, if you come up with something and say, you are not doing it right, you are to blame, you are to fault, and you need to change, people will fight against that very strongly. And especially in the political area, especially around the debates around, you know, ESG and environmental policies. A lot of these issues in the end come down to identity, that people feel their identity is being attacked and undermined. We can see that very strongly now with the conversations you're having here in Denmark around cow burps, around taxing farming. We've had this in the Netherlands with control of nitrates. My work in Ireland, the biggest political issue in Ireland is the re-wetting of peat bogs. And when you speak to farmers, and I've spoken to a lot of farmers in Ireland about this, it always comes down to identity. You know, we spent two generations draining those peat bogs, and now you're saying we have to turn them back to wasteland. This is all identity conversation. This is not about sustainability or climate change. So when we start these conversations, and when you initiate them, they have to be finding ways of speaking to values and identity. So I have a little thing for you here, which is I'd like you to have a conversation. I'd like you to have a conversation with a person next to you, just for 2 minutes. But after all, this is about conversations. And in that conversation, I would like you, in a few words, to say, when I think of my work, this is what gives me the greatest pleasure and makes me most proud of what I do. Yeah? When I think of my work, this is what gives me the greatest pleasure, and this is what makes me most proud of what I do. I'm going to give you a couple of minutes. When I want you to stop, I'll put my hand up like that, okay? And just a few words, and listen carefully to what the other person says. Okay.
Thank you.
I hope that you weren't talking so much there about the technicalities of it, but you were immediately going to the values. That process there of starting people by talking about what's important to them, what they care about, what they value, what makes them proud, is the process that myself and my colleagues and our international community of social researchers have been using for doing our exploration into the communication of climate change, which is my speciality. But we start people by talking about those things, and it's only then we start talking about climate change. So they start by finding what they have in common. And by the way, when people have things that are different, those values are also powerful. Because I'll give an example. An organization I worked with in Britain ran a whole campaign on climate change called For the Love Of, in which people didn't talk about climate change as such. They talked about what they loved and how they were worried that climate change would affect it. And even though people loved very different things, the fact that you were talking about love and what you really valued connects people. Yeah? So even if you don't have the same values, talking about values creates a connection. So I've done this process of all of the groups I already talked about all around the world. Also some large organizations. We've had conversations like this inside IKEA. Shell, I've interviewed people in Shell Oil. That's a very interesting conversation. Large banks, major finances. And I think this is the key to people's motivation, is those values. When you did this conversation, by the way, did anybody say, yes, what really excites me is my passion for excellence and relentless optimism? Maybe they did. Did anyone say that? Did they say, yes, what gets me out of bed in the morning is thinking outside the box and doing no evil? You see where I'm going with this now? Yeah. Or, yes, what I really value in my work is creating a culture of creating a culture of warmth and belonging. Okay, that was Starbucks, that one, by the way. Getting a sense, these corporate values have a value, my own organization had them, in terms of creating internal policy, but actually they're kind of toxic because they have that AI, chat GPT inauthenticity about them. They're not real values. By the way, real values are much closer and more particular to what people think. They're not these generic things. In your conversations, did anybody say, yes, what really motivates me is making shed loads of money? Did people say that? Some people might. But the truth is, we make a major mistake if we think that money is a major motivator. I have in my work interviewed some of the largest financiers in the field of renewable energy, people who deal with billions of dollars. And none of them on that question said their main motivation was making lots of money. They said their main motivation was building something, growing something, getting the money flowing to the places where it was needed. Yes, money, but money for them was a measure of achievement, of status, of what the money could do. Remember, money is a proxy. And if you're speaking to the chief finance officer, money is a proxy for how well they're doing their job. Or a senior manager, it's about doing a good job, building the business, doing well. It is very rarely, money is very rarely about just making money. So we have to remember also that not everybody feels that their business is great or are driven by achievement. If we're really going to talk to people throughout the organization, some people are just doing it for a job, where the money is important. But again, it's not the money, it's what the money does. It's a measure of them achieving things in life. It might be caring for their family, or it might be supporting something else. So remember, the values are always the important thing down there, right down at the bottom. And where you need to get to on circular economy or any other thing is a situation where there's a sense throughout your organization that the commitment to circular economy or any of the measures or sustainable behaviors is part and parcel of who they are, both at the whole organizational level, this is who we are in this organization, right down to a team level, right down to an individual level. Now, there's no easy way of doing that, but that is ultimately the measure of success. If it comes down as some corporate-driven AI-type slogan from head office, I can guarantee not only will you have limited success, but you might actually get people pushing against it. And I've seen that in many cases as well, where people actively resist things. So how do you have these conversations? How do you make this happen? I've been working with the Irish government, but we haven't quite started the program yet. I can't share the findings with you. But of how do we initiate conversations across business organizations, starting with government itself, which is a very large employer, on climate change? But it can relate to your work as well. And here's a set of principles. Principle one, involve everyone. As a fundamental principle, everyone must be part of a conversation. And I know that sounds good, but in reality, you've really got to be thorough about this. Because there's a real tendency to have a kind of a hierarchical mentality, but there's some people who are really important, they're the decision makers, and then there's other people who just do things. That is not true. For this stuff to work, especially real behaviors, it has to work the whole way through the organization. I worked a while ago with one of the largest conservation projects in Britain, a huge one, major visitor attraction, has 500,000 visitors a year, utterly about environmental education. And I was speaking at their annual team meeting. And afterwards, I went outside and there was a sign on the wall saying, don't smoke. And there was a bunch of people underneath all having cigarettes. These are the kind of people I like to hang out with and talk to. And they were the bin men. Men, by the way, they were all men. They were the bin men. They were the people who took out the rubbish at the end of the day. Big bin loads. They were very, very concerned about waste. They knew waste in and out. They knew exactly what the organization wasted. They were particularly horrified by the amount of waste which came out of the restaurants. They had a whole lot of ideas for how to help people not to order too much food, to take food home with them, not to waste food, how the food waste could be used. These people were the experts on waste. I said, this is great. I said, have you talked to anyone? They went, no, no one's asked us. No one's interested in what we have to say. The bin men were the key to waste. I think that, unfortunately, I think in some ways, the more progressive an organization is, the more they have blind spots like this. I worked for many years for environmental organizations like Greenpeace, and I'd always say, are you strong on diversity? They go, yeah, we're very strong. We're very concerned about diversity. And I said, like what? And they went, well, disabled people, LGBTQ+, da-da-da-da-da. And I said, okay, hands up anyone who has ever voted for right-of-center political party. Not a single hand goes up. And I said, oh, okay, so what? Half the population is not represented in your organization. And it was because the definition of diversity is so narrow. So beware of those issues in your own organization. Involve everyone. A second principle, conversations need an infrastructure. They don't just happen. I've written a whole toolkit on this. I'm happy to share with anybody on how you might do that. I think in many organizations, the best place for that is team meetings, by the way. And most organizations have situations where people come together within a team, have dedicated team meetings that are based not about telling people what to do or what the memo says or the policy says, but having a conversation, an open-ended conversation. Yeah, and that often works best not as a group, but actually between pairs, like you did just here, because that feels safe and confidential. That also allows the space for people to get a feeling of, do they agree on things? Don't they agree on things? It maybe allows a space for a difference of opinion. Like those oil workers coming off the tar sands, the oil sands in Canada. Some people would say, I think climate change, it's a load of horseshit. I don't believe in that. It allowed the space for everybody to say, well, I think it's a real problem. There's a conversation and exchange that can happen between peers, right? But you have to make it happen. You have to create the infrastructure. So team meetings based around the conversation, well facilitated. Group and pair work, I suggest. And the infrastructure is finally, third principle, it's about listening, really listening, which means if you're going to bring stuff up, if you're going to have that circular current which brings the nutrients up from the bottom, if you're going to listen to the bin men, that should be my slogan, listen to the bin men, you have to have a situation where those messages can pass up and can come back down to say, thank you very much, we've heard you, that is very interesting, we really support that, we want to talk with you. Everybody has to feel involved and committed, whatever their ideas are. And there's a fourth thing which comes from that, which is really important, which emerged in the Irish work, is safety. If you're going to have a real conversation which allows people to come up with real ideas, there has to be the space for them to challenge and question what happens already. And for many people, especially at the lower levels, and those are often the people who actually you need to do things, they don't feel safe. Now, I can't answer the question of how to do that, but I'm telling you, you have to create an organizational safety that allows for space for people to say things, including critical things. Otherwise, you haven't got a real conversation going on. And finally, feelings. There has to be space for feelings. Again, my experience is this works best in pair work, where you have people who are talking to each other. How do you feel about the world? There was a huge survey of British businesses. 1.6 million people, one of the largest surveys I've ever heard. Just 2 minutes. Environment sustainability was one of the top three issues for the vast majority of people in this vast survey. People care and feelings can come up. And if we just talk about things as a technical issue, which is just about moving bits in and out, we don't allow the space for the feelings, and the feelings are powerful. The feelings in the end are the values that motivate people to change. So make sure in your conversations, for example, you just say, how do you feel about the way that the world is going? How do you feel about climate change? How do you feel about the future that our children are facing? Just a conversation, just between pairs, to allow the feelings to emerge. So, final things. As you go through today, here's a couple of questions to ask yourself. This thing that I'm talking about here, or that you're looking at, or the stand you're looking at, or the talk you're hearing, how can I build a conversation on this? And how would I say it differently if I was speaking to different people in my organization? How would I start a conversation on this, for example, with the bin men, with the people who are at the different levels of the organization, have different values to management? Yeah? How can I speak to different values? How can I speak to people who might be more conservative? Because they're very key to get. Yeah? And secondly, whose values are represented here? Is this and the conversations I'm having just a bubble? Is it, for example, like Greenpeace or like these organizations that think they're very, very progressive, but they're just speaking inside themselves? And is there a way I can take those messages outside? So maybe we should give a last word to ChatGPT, who, as we know, wrote a much better speech than I did. So, I say in my empowering way, start the conversation, make it personal, make it peer-driven, and above all, make it matter. Thank you.
Thank you, George. Please stay with me, George. Any questions from the audience? There's a mic in the center of the stage. Just one question.
So in Denmark, there's been a lot of conversations regarding circularity and climate changes and so on, at least compared to other countries.
Yes.
But recent polls or surveys suggest that the Danish people are getting fatigued by the discussion. My question is, would you address this fatigueness with the same means as you suggest here, or should we go about it elsewhere or otherwise?
I don't know exactly what's happened in Denmark, but I suspect that it's been a very limited conversation. It's worked. It's been within a particular set of language from a particular set of people. All of my experience is that the powerful conversations that engage people are held within their own groups, within their own language. I will say, I do know a little on Denmark, you have not spent enough on public engagement, on initiating a conversation. For example, in Ireland, we set up an entire program to start conversations in every football club, in every farmers' organization, in all of these different groups. I think people become tired when it's the same language always from the same people speaking in the same way. The other thing I think is, let's find ways of talking to what people really, really care about. And a lot of the sustainability and climate change conversation is about the planet. Who cares about the planet? Or I mean, this is an abstract concept, or it's very high-level stuff. It's about international obligations, which is a really hard thing. Why should I do it if China isn't doing it? I think we need to be talking about a whole lot of other issues, which maybe don't even mention climate change or environment at all. Health is the very big one. That's the big one that we can talk to. You know? Oh, by the way, you're fantastic on organic. I really respect that. Health, maybe air pollution, maybe bringing people together, maybe making the place more beautiful. There might be ways of initiating conversations around circularity which are not just about that. But I think the next step is to find ways of talking which are less technical, less specific, less target-oriented, and more to people's values. And let's try and make this funny. I don't know how it goes. I mean, in Britain, you have to make things funny. We have to make this lighter somehow, yeah? Lighter, more fun.
This was the first episode in our series about the Loop Forum 2025. If you want to get the actionable one-pager about this keynote, please sign up for the Circularity FM newsletter. You can find it at www.circularity.fm. Let's drive a profitable circular economy. And please don't forget, the most abundant renewable resource is your imagination.
My name is Patrick Hübscher, and this is Circularity FM, the podcast about understanding, building, and managing circular business models.